Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special carpaccio for you, right?
Jeez. Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Yeah, he's normally off on Tuesday, but the Bills are working today. They're normally off on Tuesday as well, but they have a 12:15 practice this afternoon. Sal will be on hand for that. And he is joining us on the Wester Hotline, brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Good morning, Mr. Capaccio.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. I'm pretty good today.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's a different kind of Tuesday. That's okay.
It's a Tuesday work day.
But this is what happens this time of year, especially every year around Thanksgiving. We have a little fluctuation schedule, but it's going to be like that here for about a month now. So, you know, just getting ready for it.
Sal, any takeaway from last night, whether it's the Bills' win over the Rams looking better and better, or Tom Brady's 216 yards on 48 attempts, or anything at all?
Yeah, I got a couple. I think number one that this is the Brady that we've kind of been seeing for about a year. Now, he's had some great games. There's no doubt. He has not been horrible this year. But his swings of really good and really bad are a lot more variant now, right? I mean, like, he's generally, for most of his career, his floor was so high. His floor is a lot lower now, guys. When he's bad, well, we started to see that over the last couple of years, especially last year. I remember going on a lot of radio stations over the summer, just talk about the Bills, and eventually they'd say, hey, what do you think about Brady going to Tampa, since it's, you know, New England and the Bills division? And I would say, look, I know that, you know, watching him over the last year, he just hasn't been the same quarterback. He's throwing balls in the dirt. He's a little less accurate, things like that. And I think that that's coming out even more now. You know, with all that talent there, that's starting to happen. And that's okay. I mean, he's an older guy, and this is what happens at that age. And again, I'm not saying he's horrible, but it seems like when he's not that good, it's going a lot worse than it ever has before. And as far as the Rams, I think they're the best team in the NFC right now. No, whether or not we can, you know, debate, or people can say the win for the Bills over them looks better, which it does, I'm sure. But every team has, you know, ebbs and flows, and every team kind of morphs as the season goes on. I think the Rams have morphed right now into the best team in the conference.
Yeah, their offense seems to have found its stride after losing it last year. And they've, you know, on defense, it might be a little bit of the formula, Sal. And like, it's kind of how we talk about this Bills team, which is you can try to put together a perfect defense, but what you might really want to do is just get two to three great players on that side of the ball. You know, the Bills, we were looking for more plays. Make a play. Tre'Davious White, Tremaine Edmonds, Jerry Hughes. And with the Rams, you've got Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. And just having those two guys on that side of the ball, they make big plays. You know, they make the big plays when they kind of need to.
Yeah, and at different levels, right? I mean, if you could have a great player at two different levels on the front, you know, the front seven, the back seven, if you could have a D lineman, a linebacker, and a DB, something like that would be great too. The perfect scenario. But it's kind of like in baseball, and they say be really great up the middle, right? If you have a really good, whether it's a catcher, a shortstop, and a center fielder, something like that, you know, you want to be really good. I think you want to be good at every level, or at least have a great player at every level, like you're bringing up. But the other thing I'll say about the Rams, when they're rolling, they're just super fun to watch. They really are. Even in Buffalo, like it just came like an avalanche in that second half. And you're like, how do you stop this? It was amazing. When Sean McVay is rolling as far as play calling, and they're in a rhythm, and those receivers, they're just really fun to watch, and they are kind of really they personify football in today's NFL in 2020 when they're on a roll.
And if I'm comparing them to the Bills, you know, they've got a offensive mind in Sean McVay, and you know the Bills' offensive play caller Brian Daboll is doing a nice job. They've got a good young quarterback. They've got good receivers. The thing the Rams might have a huge edge in terms of passing game weapons, is tight end, right? They actually use their tight ends, and we saw their tight ends get used against the Bills as well. I feel like the conversation, Sal, about the Bills, it's not necessarily for this year. We'll see if somebody can kind of step in and continue to perform. But the next step for this Bills offense is to keep everything in place and add a matchup problem at tight end if they don't already have one.
Yeah, I think they really felt that Dawson Knox would be that, you know, but so far that hasn't happened. He's had good moments, we know that, and I think he can be a matchup against certain players, against certain defenses. That hasn't happened. I think Tyler Croft has been much more the steady guy here over the last year, since he's, you know, this year especially. And, you know, there's still time for Dawson Knox. I think a lot of fans are losing a lot of patience in him, and I get that, and rightly so in a lot of areas because he's been so inconsistent. You know, but we'll see. You know, maybe I think this year is a lot different because of a lot of reasons, obviously, with the lack of training camp and preseason and reps and stuff like that, but also because, you know, the Bills did load up on wide receiver, and now they have all these weapons. So you're right, Jeremy. I think that maybe that's a bit of a difference there, but I'm not sure that there's a lot of balls to go around for a tight end in this offense if you really want it to hum the way it's supposed to hum, you know?
Yeah, that's one thing. I was just looking at the targets for Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett over the course of the season. You know, the Bills just – they might have the lowest number of throws to tight ends in the league. I know that at one point charting this, J.J. Zacharyson charts this for fantasy purposes, that the Bills have been at the top of the league in percentage of targets that go to receivers. They just don't – they don't check it down to backs too much, and they don't use tight ends too much. It's Brown, Beasley, and Diggs getting most of their targets on a level that no other team, at least not many, is really seeing.
And that goes to both Brian Daboll and Josh Allen, right? I mean, it's not just Brian Daboll not calling plays for tight ends. I think, you know, he has them in routes sometimes. It's also Josh Allen. He doesn't like to check down a lot. He likes to, you know, take a shot. And he's not throwing it really deep either. I just think he likes to make sure that he's getting the ball down the field a little bit and pushing it. He's had to do more of the check down stuff here this year over the last, you know, month and a half or whatever. But that's on both of them. You know, I don't think that they're necessarily not calling plays for the tight end. You know where they use the tight end? It's been good as the red zone, goal line especially. You know, Lee Smith has a touchdown catch. Yeah. Dawson Knox has what?
Reggie Gilliam.
Reggie Gilliam. That's where the Bills use their tight end, is at the goal line. It's very creative, by the way. Go watch some of the plays where the Bills have scored with their tight end at the goal line. Watch some of the routes where they're coming from. That's where they are very effective with the tight end.
Since you're on the topic of tight ends, there was some news yesterday from Sean McDermott. So what has happened with Tommy Sweeney?
Yeah, Tommy Sweeney, he's not going to play in 2020, guys. A cardiologist diagnosed him with, I want to say the word right.
Myocarditis.
Myocarditis. Thank you. I wanted to look at it, so I said it right. Myocarditis. And this is a condition that is often also related to COVID-19. People who have COVID-19 have also had this condition later on. It happened to a pitcher, I believe, in baseball as well.
Yeah, a Red Sox pitcher.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here. He was on the COVID-19 list back in October. Dawson Knox had tested positive. So Tommy Sweeney, Lee Smith, and Nate Becker all went on the COVID list. Remember that they were the close contact when they lost all those tight ends 1 week. And then he came off the list on November 11th. That was 13 days ago. So now here we are. So as of yesterday, which was 12 days after that, Sean McDermott announced that. Now, the thing with Sweeney is, he was on the PUP list. He had not played all year. He was coming back. And this was the week, like literally this was the week deadline for him to begin practicing if the team wanted to activate him. What they could have done this week was start practicing him, and then they would have a three-week window to open to put him on the active roster. If he didn't practice this week, he was lost for the season anyway. Or if they didn't activate him after those 3 weeks, he was lost for the season. Mm-hmm. That option is obviously out the window now, and you know, according to Sean McDermott, they'll prepare for him to be playing next year.
Let's do Josh Norman and Isaiah Hodgins. So what is Josh Norman's status as they go back to work today?
Well, as of right now, there's been no change as far as I've seen or heard, you know, as far as his designation. So we'll see if they, you know, move him off the COVID list. So far, he's still on there. And remember, you know, he doesn't count as a roster spot, but they do have two open roster spots essentially right now. So they could move him off there right there. So as far as Isaiah Hodgins, this was nothing. The team has not officially reported it. I'm expecting that to happen today because it was on the transactions wire yesterday. It was on the official NFL transactions wire that Isaiah Hodgins has been designated to return, which is super interesting. I'm actually surprised. I thought he was going to have a redshirt year. They weren't going to worry about it. They weren't going to put him out there. So I think there's three ways we can look at this, guys. Number one, they want to see if he can help them, which could very well be possible. Okay, because what happens is if he starts practicing this week because he's designated to return, which obviously is going to happen now, they have 21 days to put him on the active roster. So now they might feel he's healthy. We saw enough in training camp. We think he can help us. Let's go put him on the field to make sure.
Yeah.
Number two reason is they might just want to get him 3 weeks of reps before the season's over at practice. You know, because they can do that. I mean, it's basically he'd be kind of essentially like a practice squad player practicing with the team for 3 weeks, and then they can decide. But they may have no intention of that. They could just say, we're going to let him practice, get all these reps in for 3 weeks, because it's better than having nothing mm-hmm. before he gets to the offseason. And the third reason is this could just be insurance. Hey, what if we lose John Brown? What if we lose another wide receiver? If this guy's practicing, at least we have another option to go to, because, yeah, we have Jay Kumerow, we have Duke Williams, but we can do that as well because now, you know, at least we're having options going forward if something like that happens. So I'm very interested to see how this all plays out.
Speaking of, I'm very interested to see how this all plays out. What is going on with Mitch Morse? How did he go from big free agent signing, highest paid center, anchor the offensive line to, yeah, he's in the mix to play Sunday. Like, what is going on?
I don't know. This goes back to the last game when he was active and healthy and did not play. And remember, he had just come off the concussion. He had missed a week. So a lot of people speculated, oh, they want to give him another week. But Sean McDermott kind of closed the door on that and said it was a coach's decision, right?
Right.
Now, you can also have a lot of coach speak in there, right? Maybe you just try protecting the player or whatever.
Yep.
But they did, if it was a health-related issue, I do, especially with that particular issue, I don't believe he would have ever been activated in the first place for the game. You know what I mean?
Or he could have said it yesterday. Yeah, guys, you know what? I want to
go back to that point in time, I'm saying. Let's go back to
when he was activated for Arizona. Okay.
Right. I'm just saying for the Arizona game specifically, if it was a health issue, I don't think he would have been activated.
Huh.
You know what I mean? He probably would have just been not on the active roster. So we get to this week now, and yesterday was asked again the same question. And yes, you're right, Howard. You could go back to that answer, but again, it was no. The answer was that he's in the mix, and we'll see if he's going to play. There's been nothing about anything dealing with health, whether it's concussion or any other related issue. So at this point in time, the best answer I can give you is this is clearly a football decision. Why? I don't know. Obviously, the coaches feel that he's just not playing well enough or somebody else is playing better that they don't want to commit to him being the starter. But it's clearly a football issue at this point. This is not about health. This is not about concussions.
Yeah.
That's been made clear by the head coach.
Yeah, I guess that's what really puzzled me because you know, they always talk about best five guys, right? So I guess if he doesn't play and he's healthy, we have all, right? We're believing he's healthy. If he doesn't play Sunday, then the Bills are saying is he's not the best center on the team. And I'm going to guess John Feliciano would be at center. So how do you go from him, all of a sudden, he's not the best center on the team, Feliciano is. But then if you're doing that, you're taking one of your best offensive guard probably in Feliciano. And now you're weakening the guard spot by not getting the best guards out on the field in those spots.
I understand that perception. I've been thinking about that ever since, you know, yesterday. Because here's the thing. Let's just say they believe Feliciano's the better center. You might be able to make that argument, right? I mean, John Feliciano's a good player.
He's been fine, yeah, right.
And he's been fine. And let's just say you feel, hey, we haven't been getting enough from Mitch this year. And right now, John Feliciano's the better center. And let's just say you also, and let's also think about, I know that they paid Mitch Morse a lot of money and that, you know, there's always a financial element to all these things. Feliciano's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to see him play center and believe, hey, that's we like this and we want to go forward with him at center. Let's just say all that's true. I don't know. But even if you do like Feliciano more at center, all right, then I still think, though, that what is the drop off between him to Morse?
Yep.
And compared to Feliciano at guard to the next guy, which is Butker.
Right.
You have to really believe like Butker's playing really well at guard to still justify that move, right? I mean, because even if you again, even if you believe Feliciano's the better center than Morse, are you still not a better team by putting him still at guard with Morse at center? Obviously, the Bills don't feel that way.
Yeah.
And this could also be about they might feel really, really certain. The guys we haven't talked about are the guards, like Butker, Brian Winters.
That's the
like,
I
these
was,
are guys.
I was going to mention Winters, Sal. No, I was going to say you mentioned Butker, and I'd say Winters, too, because in theory,
right?
Well, not in theory, when Cody Ford's healthy, he's a starting guard on this team. That's why I said I think it's kind of puzzling because I think a lot of us always thought, well, the best five, it turns out, would be the combination that has yet to play a game this season. Dawkins, Ford, Morse, Feliciano, and Darrell Williams. Now, they haven't played one game yet this season, and I would think, I know there's talk about continuity, and Sean McDermott mentioned they felt they had momentum with the guys up front, right? From the New England and Seattle game, they had momentum. They stayed with it against Arizona. But it's odd that the five guys that most people thought would be the starters haven't even had a chance to play together yet this season, and now might all be healthy this week.
And I know we always say best five. They always said best five, and it's not wrong. I mean, you do go that way. But let's also kind of narrow the scope here. Most guys can't play all five.
Right,
positions.
And I think it's
so
best
really
five
it is
in
so
taking
really
into
it
position.
Is,
I think it's the best five with the positions.
So really, it is best like interior guy or best tackles.
Yeah.
Things like that because. You know, John Feliciano's not playing tackle. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Mitch Morse isn't playing tackle.
Morse can't play guard, right?
And I don't even know. What's that?
Can Morse play guard?
I don't know. Here's the thing. I've never seen him play guard, and I don't think he's ever played guard. I have to go back to the Kansas City days, and I don't think he ever did. I have to look up. So again, that brings into question. You know, if he's only a center, which we can assume he's only a center, then it's got to be either Morse at center with Feliciano at guard. And, okay, let's just say if two things are true, are we going to do what's this called? Transitive properties here, right? You guys remember that from
transitive
from college
properties.
Or from high school?
I must have been out sick that day.
I'm going to say yes as long as there are no follow-up questions.
What are transitive okay. properties?
Yes, I remember, yes.
Okay, but I think this would fall under that, Jeremy. I'm not sure you can tell me. But if you believe Feliciano has to be on the field, and if you believe Morse is only a center, then to me it would naturally follow up that Morse is the starting center and Feliciano's one of the starting guards.
Right.
So there's more to this because obviously if Morse isn't playing guard and he's not playing center, then you don't feel he's one of the best at either any of those three positions.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what transitive properties meant, but I liked your explanation. Get a plug for your article. You did a little trip into the old Wayback Machine to 1995. Took me back down memory lane. Very nice.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. The gist of it, guys, is, and I talked about this on the Extra Point show, but I wrote about it. You know, that's what I like to do. I open my show with it, and then I write about the same thing I kind of open my show with for people to see it in written form. And the gist is, this is it, man. They have this in front of them. If the Bills don't win the AFC East, it's because the Bills didn't close it out. The Bills have an opportunity here. They are in a great position. They're in their best position this late in the year, I would say, since 1995. Now, I don't really know exactly what their records were. I didn't go back and look at, you know, 2002 or 2004 when they were charging. But you get the point. Like, this is right in front of them.
Yeah.
For two decades, you know, the Patriots owned the division. The Bills got in as a wild card over the last couple of years, twice. But really, to win the division, 1995, and I went back to 1995 and looked up, you know, Forrest Gump was the best movie.
It's a good movie.
Coolio was at the top of the charts. You know, it's the year of the OJ verdict, things like that. And I wrote about that stuff. But, you know, really the bottom line here is this is the best chance. It's not just that the Bills' last division win was in 1995. It's that they have this in front of them now. Now they just need to land this thing. They need to get this thing home. And if they don't, it's on them. It's not because the Miami Dolphins or the New England Patriots suddenly found some magic potion to go undefeated the rest of the way, right? I mean, even if that were to happen, which is not going to happen, you know, the Bills still have an opportunity here to win games and win the division.
I've got a little bit of a vibe, Sal, like, not that like the season starts now, but the first 10 games were show us who you are, get to 7-3, get out in front. Now the division is yours for the taking. And You've got games against the Chargers and the Broncos and the Patriots, if I want to even put them in that group, and games against Pittsburgh. And if I want to include Miami there as well, like other teams that are fighting for the playoffs, you know, this team is, I don't want to say destined for the playoffs, but it sure looks like they are going to the playoffs. And like right now, now it gets a little more serious to me. It kind of feels like last year where the last five games, you know, we knew they were in good shape. They looked like they'd make the playoffs. And then it became, right, Baltimore, Dallas, Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. New England. Okay, game on. Now's the real test. Now things get going in a different kind of way. And I know it's still the regular season. I know, you know, it's just week 11 or whatever it is. But when you were talking about that yesterday, that's the feeling I got. It's like, all right, you're going to win the division, and now it counts. Like, now it's time to play your best football. You got to find a way to peak after the bye week and go the remainder of the regular season and into the postseason playing your best.
Yeah, and it sets up exactly like that, right, Jeremy? Which is, you had the bye week, you're coming out of the bye week, you're getting healthy, here's the stretch run. Like, it kind of, that's the way you'd want it. I think, yep, if you could design a scenario, this is the scenario, which is, give me the bye week right before I need to just basically land this thing and get to my stretch run and make it and get all hands on deck and take this thing home. As Bulldog would say, they need to get this to the garage.
To the garage, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's really what they need to do here. Yeah. That's the gist of the article. Like, this is on the Bills. They have everything they want in front of them. Their stated goal before the season started was to have a home playoff game, and the way to do that was to win the division. So they've been saying for months and months, like, the division, that's where it's at. And now they have an opportunity here to win the division. 1995, I mean, a quarter of a century has gone by since the Buffalo Bills last won the division. It's amazing that the Indianapolis Colts won the AFC East more recently than the Bills, and they haven't been in the division in almost 20 years.
I had a full head of hair last time the Bills won a division.
So, you know, and, you know, you don't want to get ahead of yourself necessarily, and we could talk about that you know, like, as you guys always say, like, we're not the players. You know, it is one game at a time. I get that. Like, you have to beat the Chargers before you can get to the next game and the next game. But it's right there. Look at the standings. Look at the tiebreakers. Look at everything. The Bills have a great opportunity here. By the way, people talk about the Dolphins' record, like who's left on the schedule. Oh, even before last week was much more, obviously, but the Dolphins lost. But people talk about, look at the Dolphins' schedule, look at the Bills' schedule. Like, I did the numbers on this. I ran it. I wrote it in my article. Yes, the Dolphins and Bills, like, the Dolphins' remaining opponents are slightly less than the Bills in record. They have, like, three less wins than the Bills. It's, like, 31 wins for the Bills' opponents, 28 or 29 for the Dolphins. If you just take out the 10-0 Steelers, though, and the 0-10 Jets, like, that one game for each team, the Bills have a much, quote-unquote, easier strength of schedule. It's only 21 and 29 of combined opponents. That's it. And the Dolphins is 28 and something. So, yes, the schedule might, on the surface, if you just took a look at the numbers, the Bills have one of the harder remaining schedules. Well, that's because they play a 10-0 Pittsburgh Steelers team. The other 5 out of 6 games, they're pretty much all below 500 teams.
Hey, if you don't mind, I've got to pick
Except
the Bills.
Miami.
I got to pick the Bills next, so I'm looking for a little help. What is, right now, the toughest, what do you think, on paper, of course, what is the toughest game left on the Bills' schedule? What's the easiest game left for the Bills?
Hold on. Toughest? I mean, I got to say Pittsburgh, right? I mean, they're 10-0.
I mean, you don't have to.
I do think the Bills match up better with Pittsburgh than I do against other teams. Pittsburgh isn't a great running team, and I think the Bills would really concentrate on trying to, you know, shut down Ben, but mm-hmm. they do have a very good defense. And they can get after the quarterback. And I think that can cause problems, the way that they can make big plays on their defensive side. So let me look at the schedule real quick. All right, so I'll go with Pittsburgh. I just think that's tough. They're just a really good team. They're solid. They're very good. They're still a well-balanced team. It's a Sunday night. Easiest. It's a tough one. I mean, boy, I'd say Denver. But going to Denver West, yeah, that's tough.
No, I think it is Denver.
It might be this week.
Well, you know, I was waiting for you to bring up the Chargers game, but Jeremy and I were saying earlier, this is a difficult matchup from the standpoint of their passing offense is extremely good. And so I would not worry about Drew Lock beating the Bills defense. You would worry about that with Justin Herbert and Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and Hunter Henry. Not that they don't have weapons in Denver, but their quarterback isn't as good as this quarterback.
That's right. And they could push the ball down the field. But a West Coast team coming here, on a Sunday 1 o'clock game, rookie quarterback. I feel good about the Bills, you know, in a spot like that with Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier. I think that they, but you're right, they have weapons, and Justin Herbert has looked really good, and their receivers are really good. Obviously, Keenan Allen's incredible. The one player to watch this week, leading up to the week, guys, Austin Eckler for the Chargers. A lot of people have speculated he would be back for the Bills game this week. Remember, he tore the hamstring off the bone or something, week three, I think it was. It's crazy. He had been jogging and running, but Anthony Lynn yesterday said it would be great to get him back, but when he's ready, he's ready. It just kind of sounded to me like he's not going to be ready this week. I mean, there's a difference between running and jogging than actually practicing and playing, you know what I mean? And he hasn't done that yet.
All right. All right, enjoy practice today. Let us know what the latest is out there from stretching and individual.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
All right, Sal. Thank you.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.